Michigan HockeyCast 6.19, where we're just out here sending Jeff Jackson to the golf course. That time of year again, the big day before the big day, or maybe there were two big days. Do you want to talk some NHL trade deadline?
Sure.
That was pretty fast. Were you anticipating that one?
I could kind of guess it.
Yeah. Well, it felt like there were multiple deadlines. One, 2 months ago, when all of a sudden big deals started going, and then in the middle of the week, it seemed like everybody started loading up before the actual deadline. And then there were some big trades at the deadline, but I don't think like the Friday was as big a day as it was anticipated to be.
As it usually happens, the deadline day is for the sickos that are interested in like the niche players.
The AHL trades?
Not necessarily AHL, but just like, oh wow, Andrew Peak for a third round pick. Jack Roslovic just got traded. Wow.
Were you researching both of those trades?
Stuff like two Blue Jackets trades to
wow.
start us off, but
do you have any overall takes that you want to share with our listeners?
The biggest one, honestly, is just that all the talent flowed west this year. After last year and really 2 years where a lot of the talent flowed east, it's interesting how that works. How it just seems like it just happens in a conference where it's like, oh, all the teams have decided we are buying this year. And then everyone tries to one-up each other. And then you get to the end and it's like six or seven teams in the west made big-time purchases. Then you go east, and it's like the Bruins, who've been top five in the point standings all season, didn't make any moves.
Well, they didn't have anything to move.
And Florida made a couple kind of tertiary moves, but nothing notable.
Tertiary.
The Leafs kind of sat it out. Really, it was just, I mean, even the Rangers, I felt like, were one of the big losers of the deadline because
they made multiple moves.
Yeah, nothing that changes their team.
Well,
they got
they're also winning their
division. They got Wenberg. Well, here's my point. Carolina was the one team in the East that actually did something. They made a couple high-profile moves. And
for the first time in the history of their franchise?
Yeah, I didn't love that return that Pittsburgh got on Gensel, personally.
There were a few returns where you kind of shook your head.
That felt like just quantity over quality.
Yeah.
If I was Kyle Dubas, I'd have just said, I just want one of your top three prospects. Don't need picks, don't need anything else, just one guy. And instead they're like, oh, we'll take a second, a third, and three guys who are going to be like, maybe bottom sixers. And it's like, I'd prefer just one actual piece as opposed to filler. But
so it was interesting because last year you said that all of the talent went east and
yep.
yet the champion came out of the west.
Yep.
So do you see a team in the east that put itself above everyone else after the deadline?
Not really.
Or did
everyone
just hold serve?
Florida's been above everybody else for about 8 weeks
right,
now.
Right, but did anyone else close the gap?
Carolina got the closest. And adding Gensel, who's been one of the best playoff goal scorers of the last 10 years, just a guy that it goes on a rampage in the playoffs, generally speaking. And last playoffs, they also didn't have Andrei Svechnikov, who had torn his ACL. So that's two 30-40 goal scorers you're adding to the lineup versus last season. So that does that is a bit of a paradigm shifter for them. So I think them and...
You think they're the best team in the...
Metro?
The Metro?
I don't know. I still just don't really trust Frederik Andersen, but we'll see.
More than the Rangers?
I'm just not huge on the Rangers.
Yeah.
They've had they could easily win the Stanley Cup because they have some elite players, and since Igor Shesterkin woke up, they've mostly just been mowing down the competition. So, absolutely. But I just felt like it was a missed opportunity for them because they felt like they had bigger needs, and a lot of the players they were interested in, they just didn't close the deal on. And so, like, instead of Elias Lindholm and Sean Monahan and Adam Henrique and Casey Mittelstadt, it's like, oh, we got Alex Wenberg. Right? Like,
woo!
Oh, instead of Tyler Toffoli, we got Jack Roslovic. Like, it just doesn't change anything
no.
for me. Like, it doesn't shift the paradigm of their team. And I think that was kind of, it felt like a missed opportunity.
What about the Atlantic?
Well, the Atlantic, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for moves because a lot of these teams had traded a lot the previous years, right? The Lightning, the Bruins, the Maple Leafs all sent out lots of picks last year and the year before. So
did Florida 2 years ago, right?
Yep, 2 years ago, and then they also down a pick for Tkachuk as well. So they just decided all those teams kind of sat out. I mean, Tarasenko seems fine. Should deepen Florida's lineup.
Okposo?
Yeah, et cetera. I mean, the Lightning picked up, what, Duclair and Dumba? Okay.
I mean, Duclair.
I like Duclair.
Yeah, he's not
a
bad player.
He got out of San Jose, but yeah. The Leafs made some depth kind of moves. Bruins basically did nothing. I don't know. We'll see what happens there, but I do kind of wonder if the timidness of the Bruins and the Leafs and the Lightning in part is that Florida's strength is part of that.
Like they don't want to go in all in on
the year. It doesn't feel like our year because there's this team in our division that's like 30-5 in their last 35 games. Yeah. So, but instead, all the guys went west, basically.
What did you like out west?
I liked Vegas's moves. I thought it was kind of weird, the response to it online. Not the, like, cap Vegas derangement syndrome stuff. I expect that. But, like, all these people that were like, oh, Vegas' lineup, wow, this is the 1977 Canadiens. Look at this lineup. No way you could ever beat that. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, Vegas is like a sub-500 team in the last 4 months. Like, they were a team that needed to make moves. Have you watched that team recently?
Since their hot start, not
playing well recently.
Struggled. Yeah.
And it's not really even injury-related. I mean, Stone's been hurt, but they've had their whole defense from last playoffs healthy this whole time, basically. Now Martinez is a little dinged up, but they have some depth. And they've been giving up 5, 6, 7 goals to Columbus. And
is it more defense or goaltending for them?
I think defense, personally. I've just watched them a few times and was not impressed at all. So I felt that they needed to make some moves. And I think they made good ones. Hanifin, I think, will help them because their defense is old and slow. And he can kind of change that paradigm a little bit. Mantha is an interesting one. Very frustrating player. Any Red Wings fans are familiar with that. But a decent guy to deepen your lineup. And then Tomas Hertl, I thought that trade was a win-win for both teams. And contrary to how it was perceived, I think he'll help Vegas in their current win-now window because he's a really good player. For San Jose, it was a deal they should never have signed, and they got it off the books.
Like the Carlson deal?
And that was like rewarding and great. When they signed Carlson, they were still a competitor.
Yeah.
They fell off right after, but
well.
Hertl, they signed 2 years ago when he was a top deadline target and they were headed to the lottery for the third straight year. Like, what are you doing? And they let the interim GM sign that. Like, that was crazy. So to get that off the books while he still has trade value and they could get a first and a prospect that was drafted in the first round for it, I thought that was really nice work. I mean,
it'll be interesting to see what Vegas does, like who they prioritize in the offseason, because there's a lot of guys. So they go in on Hertl, right? And
yeah.
I mean, now they're going
they
to have
Hertl at a 6.5, I think. San Jose retains 1.7 of the 8.2.
But I mean, they have like Chandler Stevenson and Marchessault.
Stevenson's been like really bad this year. So Hanifin, I think he's gone.
I mean, they're.
I was looking at this the other night. I think if you sign Marchessault and Hanifin, then you can do that. But you'll have to lose like Amadio and some of those depth kind of guys. But yeah, Vegas is interesting. They're going to be an interesting team because they're going to be. Hurdle's not going to be back from injury in for a few weeks, so they'll have a couple weeks to integrate him. And then
Eichel's back, right?
Eichel's back, but if Stone, I mean, everyone assumes Stone will be back game one because blah, 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 Vegas. But they haven't really indicated that. I mean, the talk was that it might be second or third round. Mm. And his injury is a lacerated spleen, which is famously what Peter Forsberg had when he missed the conference finals and the Stanley Cup finals. Like, that's a very serious injury.
Yeah, he didn't play until the final or the playoffs the next year.
Yeah, like, that's a serious one. And Stone, it's not like they just shut Stone down with an aching back. Like,
yeah. So they're kind of on pace to face Edmonton in the first round. So there's a...
They could fall into the wild card slot.
Well, they are, but I think they'll probably pull ahead of the Kings.
Kings have an easy schedule, though. I think they might be in the wild card slot.
But it could be interesting if they face Vegas, because there may not be a second round then.
Yeah.
Vegas. The Oilers.
Yeah.
Between those. One of those two. That could be maybe the biggest first round series.
There's going to be some knockdown, drag out fights in the West in the first round. Where Vegas gets drawn will be interesting. Certainly the 2 and 3 in the Central will play a nasty fight, whoever those teams are.
What's really funny about that is if you look at those three teams, like one of them dominates another and can't beat the third. Like Colorado has beaten Dallas all three times, but hasn't beaten Winnipeg. And Winnipeg beats Colorado but can't beat Dallas, and Dallas crushes Winnipeg but can't beat Colorado. So it's an interesting sort of
I like dynamic. What all those teams did. The Stars added Chris Tanev, which I thought was really good. They needed another defenseman to help them out. They didn't add it forward, but they don't really need to.
They're pretty deep.
Well, with Logan Stankoven coming up and playing really well. I really liked what the Avalanche did, deepening their lineup.
With Walker and...
Yeah, and Walker was a guy that I think needs to be in the right situation to succeed. I was talking about him as a Maple Leafs target, and I didn't like that at all. I don't think he fit what they
going
needed.
To Toronto?
Yeah, I don't think he fit what they
needed. But he
fits
better in Colorado?
Well, because he can play third pair, and he's stylistically more of a fit with what the Avalanche do as a team and their scheme and all that stuff and his size. So I like what the Avalanche did, and then I like what Winnipeg did.
That's a Foley deal.
Scooping up Toffoli at a really cheap price.
Second and a third.
28-goal scorer. I mean, come on. So Winnipeg's got probably the deepest forward lineup of any team. So, yeah.
You know what this means. The Flyers are probably going to win the Cup.
So anyway. it was a lively deadline. I thought the other loser I had was Edmonton, just briefly.
Well, they got Henrique, right?
Yeah, I like Henrique, but... I don't know, shrug.
Shrug?
it just felt like they needed something a little more. I think they could have addressed defense more, but their problem is that they were a salary-in, salary-out team.
Yeah.
They don't have any LTIR space, and...
Nobody wanted Jack Campbell?
Well, that's their biggest problem, is they're spending $3 million for a player who does not play for them.
Seven, an okay run at Bakersfield, right?
Yeah.
It was like 9-1-5 or 9...
There was talk about him coming back up, but... Now I think they can't until the playoffs, right? Cause,
oh, is there like a rule?
Well, because they're getting the overage, the buried space.
Oh.
So they're paying $5 million, but only $3.5 million is charged the cap because you get a certain amount that's buryable.
Well, couldn't they bring him up and then they would have to swap out cap space?
They'd have to swap out another player, and they're just really tight against it. So,
Well, it'll definitely be interesting. You know, I was talking to somebody this weekend, and I was like, you know, it would be interesting in college hockey. I mean, you couldn't do this because of the way that it's set up, but like you look at Ryan Bischel and you know, sort of the way that he played even this weekend and 2 weekends ago and basically for the last 3 years, and you're like, you know, Notre Dame's, you know, they needed a bit of a miracle run in the Big Ten tournament, but what would he have gone for? Like in the college trade deadline, you know, like
yeah, he would have probably.
I mean, Michigan would have traded what, 3 freshmen? I like. There's no
Denver would have played with
Denver
with their 880 teams.
Yeah.
as the number one seed. One thing, by the way, on the goalie topic, I do want to bring up quickly: the New Jersey front office should be arrested.
All right.
They watched the goaltending destroy the season, and then after the season's over. At the deadline, they're like, oh, now we'll do some moves. Like, you could have...
Well, I mean, they got...
Yeah, they did Vanecek for Kack, and then they scooped up Jake Allen. So they got 2 new goalies.
They got 2?
Yeah. But on the same
but
day...
But aren't they both kind of backups?
But on the same day that they traded Tyler Toffoli, essentially waving the white flag on the season. It's like, you could have done either of those moves at any point in the last 10 weeks as these two terrible goalies destroyed your season. And it's like, well, now we'll try something different. After we're out of the playoff picture. The same week they fired Lindy Ruff. After they were out of the playoff.
Who's the Pistons GM running
what
this?
What is it?
All right. We've gone to the pro side for a while now. We should talk about Michigan's 2-game series against Notre Dame. Only 2 games, thankfully. We didn't have to go back to Yost on Sunday. Michigan does win the series in 2 really tight games that were similar in enough ways. They win 5-4 on Friday and then 4-3 on Saturday. So on the Friday game, we'll talk about that in this segment. The biggest thing, and it was probably known in some circles, I didn't have clarification, and you sometimes don't get this kind of injury-related stuff in a niche sport like college hockey, but Danny Nelson didn't play for Notre Dame and heard that his injury is not great. And it's too bad for Notre Dame, too bad for him. I actually kind of liked him as a prospect, and he wasn't going to play. And that's a big deal for Notre Dame because they don't have a lot of offensive talent. They don't have a lot of goal scorers. Obviously, we all know about Landon Slaggart. And then, you know, you predicted that Drew Bavaro was going to score like 4 goals on the weekend. So I give you hat tip for that. But just losing Nelson is a big deal, and that injury looked pretty rough a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, tough blow for Notre Dame, but for Michigan, they had Barcheski and Ethan Edwards healthy, which we were not sure about. So
yeah, the Edwards thing was a little odd because we didn't hear or see anything about that other than they just didn't play.
Yeah,
Barzo, you could see, well, he kind of got rocked in the neck and head, and like, well, and then he didn't play Saturday. You could figure out why on that one. But he was back in the lineup for this weekend. And so Michigan has a really good first period, but it didn't start super well as Notre Dame hits the iron in like the first minute on the first shift. And then they get a power play after LaPointe goes to the box for a slash, and they almost score twice, where Duke makes a great play in the slot to take away a cross pass that was probably going to end up in the back of the net as you had an unmarked guy coming in from the backside. And then Hunter Strand misses an open net on a tip where, I mean, it's not the easiest of plays, but, you know, the chance is there if he can get it, and he cannot. And so Michigan kind of dodges a few bullets early. But they give it right back as Landon Slaggett walks into the zone, crosses the blue line, and you just sort of have a retreating Truscott and Fantilli giving a lot of ground, and then he just sort of keeps going and going, gets the top of the house, fires, and beats Barcheski. That one, I couldn't tell if he was screened or not. I tried to look at the replay a few times, couldn't get a clear view of it. To me, that goal seems a little bit more on the gap control of the defense than on anything else.
I didn't like this goal at all from Barcheski.
From Barcheski?
That you just can't be giving that goal up.
Well, but I mean,
That's a shot from pretty far out.
Do you want your defense to, like, not continuing to bail on the puck? Or are you fine with them just kind of fading
Truscott
back into the
house? Truscott can play a little tighter gap. His stick is close to getting it. You'd like a little better effort or whatever, but again, that's a shot from really far out
that you think just needs to be saved.
Yeah.
Does it look like he's screened?
There might be a little screen, but I don't think it matters too much. The guy doesn't like change. Like, the guy starts setting up to shoot, then there's a little potential movement in front, but it's far out. It's not like right in front of him.
Yeah.
So
Notre Dame scores.
It didn't give me a great feeling at that moment after the last weekend where it's kind of like, oh boy,
if this is the goaltending we're getting. It might be a quick
hit. Just know that shot is not going in against Ryan Bischel.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. So it's 1-0 Notre Dame. They score on that shot, and then they get, like, basically no shots for the rest of the period. Michigan just turns it on and starts creating chances. About halfway through, its shots are 8-2, and then they do get their first power play. Michigan does their first power play of the night. And Moldenauer recovers a loose puck in the slot, fires it, and it kind of squeaks through Bischel and through a couple of Irish defensemen is there in and behind him, in front of him and behind him. Little bit lucky for Michigan that one kind of gets through, but it's a hard shot from in tight that nobody can really get a firm block on, and so the puck goes in. It's 1-1.
I thought this was a really good weekend from Moldenauer.
Oh, you liked him overall?
Yeah, I thought he looked really noticeable when he hasn't necessarily been at different points in this season. And he just jumps up and pounces on this one. And you know, it's not as easy of a goal as it looks because there was a lot of traffic going on. Bischel was way out. There were two Irish guys in the crease.
It kind of had to have a bit of a seeing eye effect there of just worming its way through. And then Michigan goes out in front. You have Brindley gives a nice little pass to Shifsky with some nice skating and a late dish to Rutger. He puts it in. Pretty impressive goal. It gives Michigan a 2-1 lead, and so you have a rough go at the beginning, but just after halfway through, you're up 2-1. You're feeling a little bit better at that point.
Yeah, this was a clown show from the Notre Dame defense.
Clown show.
Bavaro steps up for a hit. Doesn't really do anything with it. Then the puck gets by him. Master Domenico is just, the controller's disconnected, and he's sliding out of the slot while there are two Wolverines in it. I mean, what is going on with this? Oof. I mean, this was a good period, though, for Michigan. They were really dominant in this period. Maybe one of their best they've played all season.
Well, you know, at 5 minutes to go, shots were 16-2,
yeah.
And they end up, I think, about 18-2, 18 or 20-2. And I mean, so it's really good from the forwards in terms of keeping control of the puck and the pressure on. But the defense also just didn't allow anything whenever Notre Dame had the puck. I mean, I think Peter joked to me, he's like, you know, we don't, do they even need the Zamboni at this end of the ice? Like, were they even down here at all? So, real nice 2-1 period. Going into the second, then this is where it gets a little discombobulated for Michigan. The middle part of the second period, they kind of start to fade a little bit. They're still out shooting Notre Dame, although Notre Dame is starting to get back into the game, getting more shots, more chances, and they get a power play. Nothing comes of it, and then Nazer trips a guy, and so they're on their third one. And then this is kind of where the game changes a little bit from a score perspective, that Bavaro lets a shot go from straight away, and it didn't seem super harmless. It was back by the blue line, and it just kind of tucks inside the post. I looked again at this. I didn't really see a screen in front of Barchewski.
There's two guys, but they are to the opposite side. Barchewski should have been able to pick that up.
Yeah, and it just didn't seem good enough.
No, not good.
So a power play goal for Notre Dame, 2-2, and then this is where it really starts to unravel for him. So there's a loose puck after the faceoff that's just kind of bouncing around people's skates. There's skates and sticks kind of swinging at it, and the puck is evading all of them until finally Moynihan gets his stick on it and just fires one right at Barchewski, and it goes between his pads, five hole-ish, and it's in. It looked like maybe it could have been redirected, but sort of the problem is when the puck is like close enough, don't you kind of have to be down in that situation, or do you want him standing? Is it unlucky?
I don't have a major preference. It was not particularly great. I don't have a real diagnosis on what he should be doing there. I'm not up on the ins and outs of like goaltending posture
technique
and stuff like that. But this was a bubble hockey goal, right? Like this is, you know, the thing in bubble hockey
where you just,
where the two guys like are like that, and you're spinning the stick, and
yeah,
they're just spinning around, and
yeah,
boom, 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 and then all of a sudden, boom, the puck flies.
One of them hits it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what this was. A bunch of guys just whacking away, and suddenly, boom, a shot comes from it, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, you just kind of, I mean, so do you not blame Barchewski for that then, if it's in that situation, or?
I don't really know what to say about it.
It just seems kind of random.
It was just a weird goal. It was a weird goal. You would prefer it to not go in. I mean, again, the theme is that none of these goals were super threatening for chances.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that one is the most understandable of the four he gives up, but none of them were particularly threatening chances.
So Michigan's dominating the game in shots. They hadn't had a good run up to this point in this period, but had pretty much owned the first period. And then now they find themselves down 3-2. And then Bavaro walks down the boards and from a bad angle shoots. And I think Moldenauer misses the pickup there. But even still, like this shot is from... the angle is so poor, and it just goes through Barchewski. Like this one, after giving up the last few, that you got to keep this out. You got to keep your team in the game. And at that point, when you give this up, it's 4-2. And you're like, I mean, are you going to beat Bischel three more times?
Well, this is when I said to you to bring Noah West in.
You did text me that.
I had seen enough of Barchewski. This dude wasn't saving a beach ball for 35 minutes. It was really brutal. But he redeemed himself some, certainly on Saturday. So positive things. But that stretch from the start of the Friday game of the previous week to this point in the Friday game of this
late
week,
in the second period,
that was probably the worst four-ish periods that he's played all season. It was...
Yeah, that's probably true, because I don't remember him having a lot of bad goals, but some of these were not his greatest. So Michigan, at that point, had only had a few shots in the period after having so many in the first. They just didn't have the puck, they didn't control it really well, and then things start to spiral. And finally, it seems like at 4-2, they kind of get a little bit of emotion back and a little bit of fire, and they get the puck down to the other end, get a few chances.
Even counting the full game on Friday, between the Minnesota game and the Notre Dame game, it was 9 goals on 42 shots.
Yeah, that's...
So it was even lower then. It was like 9 goals on like probably 35 shots, something like that.
That wasn't...
Not good.
Not good. But Michigan does get one back. This one might have been a bit lucky. There's a defensive zone turnover for Notre Dame. Shifsky gets the puck, and it looks like maybe he shoots it off of a Notre Dame stick and goes in the top corner. Maybe he just picked the corner. It was tough to tell on the replay. Either way, obviously, he gets credit for the goal. But it's a big goal there at the end of the second period, because going into the breakdown two after just, you know, the domination of the first period, when you're up 2-1, all of a sudden you're down 4-2, but 4-3 isn't quite as bad because you're just basically one break away from tying it up, and, you know, getting that one on Bischel, I thought, was pretty huge there.
Yeah, this was really, I think, the turning point of the game.
Because if Notre Dame kind of can get to the end of that period
with a two-goal lead, I mean, Notre Dame doesn't protect leads like they used to, but it still is not an enviable position when you're going up and facing a goalie like that. And this one was, yeah, it was kind of fluky. It was a weird turnaround shot. It felt like sort of a freebie from Bischel to some degree. It certainly wasn't a high-quality tap-in goal that he had no chance on. So anytime you can just beat him with a shot,
yeah,
it's like, okay, we got something. And then it really just kind of turns in Michigan's favor right after that.
Well, right after that is when you get the first major of the weekend, and Casey gets crunched, you know, sort of from behind into the boards. And they review it, and it is a major. The thing on review for me that I kind of didn't love is that, you know, Casey sort of baits him into it and turns into him into the boards and takes the hit. You know, maybe it's a penalty, maybe it's a boarding call or whatever. It didn't really feel like a major to me, but I mean, you know, I don't know what majors or targeting or anything
it
is
was
anymore,
so first of all, this was on while Michigan was on the power play, which is important to note.
Yeah.
And so it gave them 5-on-3 time.
Because there's an unsportsmanlike call, I guess, against Notre Dame.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was, personally. One thing I'll say about the major stuff before, you know, we really get into the Saturday stuff is it just feels to me like either players in college hockey don't really know how to defend themselves very well or are trying to get hit badly, or the players who are hitting are just really untrained and undisciplined relative.
Yeah.
'Cause like there are still some weird majors and sometimes that open ice hits get flagged for that kind of stuff, but there's been a lot of them in the recent season for Michigan, like this year specifically, where I'm like, even in an NHL sense, I'm like, that's just not a good hit. Like, I mean, how many times do you see...
You mean from the offender?
Yeah, like how many times do you see a guy just come through and just square in the numbers, just boom, guy face first into the boards? Like, you don't see that very much in NHL. Like, you know, they hit hard and they... But just like really undisciplined...
Sort of like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, what, just dangerous hits. Like, I don't know if all of those should be majors in an ideal world, but they're just like... Stop doing that.
It also
feels
like some of those aren't even beneficial.
No.
Like the hit that you make doesn't change the play.
Yeah. So in this case, and this is kind of the thing that there's always debate about, certainly with the, to come back around, if you remember the Matt Rempe on Nathan Bastian hit, whenever you have a size imbalance in hits, this kind of discussion comes up because Casey's small and he also kind of hunches himself over and he's trying to like kind of dip around the guy, I think, is his intention here.
Well, he shoulder peeks before he goes into the corner, so he knows where the guy is.
Yeah,
he starts to turn,
because I think he's trying to wiggle past the guy,
yeah,
like underneath the hit. And then the guy just kind of grabs him and drives him face first into the boards.
Yeah.
It's going to be a major every time, in my opinion, based on what we've seen.
Well, and that's kind of my point, is like, I'm sort of done arguing if this should or shouldn't be a major, because like, we've stated that for like 2 or 3 years now, but the truth is that if you make that hit in the Big Ten, I don't know if it's true in all of college hockey, I don't watch enough other college hockey, but in the Big Ten, if you make that hit, you can't be surprised when they call it, and whether it should or shouldn't be, that's not really the point.
Yeah,
it
might have been a boarding call in the NHL, but it also just, it wasn't a good one to watch.
Yeah.
Like, it's a small guy, and he's just thumped right off the boards, and it's like, ooh.
Well, and I tell Casey that's not how you really want to protect yourself either, but anyway, so it's a big deal going into the third because it's right at the end, and, you know, Michigan has now a 5-on-3 when they come out, and they're only down a goal, and you think, okay, they probably should get one, and...
I didn't think they used the time very well at the end of the period.
Oh, before the break?
They had 46 seconds left, and that was the bulk of the 5-on-3 time, and yeah, they really did nothing with it, which was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, they did sort of kind of just play it out, but coming out in the third, they do get a goal pretty early. I think it's technically a 5-on-4 goal, but it's, I mean, in spirit, it's a 5-on-3 because the guy doesn't really enter the play yet. You get TJ Hughes shoots from like inside the point, because obviously everyone is a little bit closer. You don't have to be as far back. There's only three penalty killers on the ice. And this one goes, I think, straight in the net. I don't believe that this one was tipped. There was another one later the next weekend or the next day that was tipped, but this one was just a shot that goes in under the bar. The guy coming out of the box from the previous penalty,
it might have hit one of those Notre Dame guys, but I don't think so.
So it's 4-4, and now...
For a pseudo 5-on-3 goal, it's really not a quality look.
Yeah.
It's just teeing a guy up from pretty high out without a ton of traffic. But hey, you take it.
Yes. And then, so Michigan has tied the game at 4, and they have still on the power play. And this is where they actually get a very nice power play goal, as you get Casey with just a very smooth skating play in the zone. Gets away from a guy, backhands to Rutger on the far dot. On a perfect pass. Like, the thing that Michigan has done not as well the last couple of weeks, handful of games, is when they tee up those one-timers, the passes are just a little bit off. I think the power play puck movement is working. It's just not exactly where you'd want it, so the guy has to sort of readjust and then shoot. And so then the advantage that you get from, you know, the cross-ice pass is off, because either the killer or the goalie gets a chance to reset and get in position. This was just a pass that he put right on Rutger's tape, who one times it into the back of the net. You could see it kind of coming as Bischel's just sort of flailing to get out there, and Rutger gets it off so fast, and all of a sudden Michigan's in a 5-4 lead. And this is big because they take advantage of their major, you know, whether they should or shouldn't have gotten it, it doesn't really matter at this point. They take advantage of it, and they get the goals, and now they're back in the lead after, you know, not too long ago, being down 4-2, and like the air had pretty much gone out of Yost.
It really flipped the game, the major. The Notre Dame penalty kill gave Michigan hell on Saturday night, and a lot of what they do really well in this penalty kill, which is personally the way I would choose to teach penalty killing. I love the way Notre Dame coaches it. But when you are aggressive and you pressure up high, if you don't get the takeaway, then you are exposed down low, because then the other team has a numbers advantage. And so Casey gets past the first two guys. Number 10 for Notre Dame is in a lot of conflict and doesn't really do a lot to take this. He doesn't really know what he's doing. He's sort of caught in between, do I want to shade over more and try and check Casey, or do I go back to what I was supposed to be doing, which was covering backside passing lanes? And so then there's a little bit of a lane open, and Rutger finishes it off.
You know, and this was probably one of the better periods after this of Michigan's defense of the season, because I think that they only gave up about 4 shots on goal, and Notre Dame had some chances, you know, at the end, but as the period progressed, you know, Michigan basically kept the puck. I mean, shots were 37-22 about halfway through, and Notre Dame hadn't really added a whole lot at that point. Michigan has a couple chances to extend the lead, and they can't. You know, 5 minutes later, Notre Dame still doesn't have another shot on net. And so they go empty at 2. They pull Bischel. And, you know, this is where we get probably one of the more controversial plays of the weekend, where Casey goes for the net from his own zone, but just misses. And Frank Naser wins the race to the puck, even though it's behind the net, pokes it out in front and scores the goal and gives Michigan the empty netter. But he's whistled for icing, because it's, I guess, stated that the Irish guy was at the top of the circle first, but like upon replay, it didn't necessarily seem like that. And you went up and looked up a rule about, you know, who wins it, and it's sort of a judgment call. And to me, on the replay and on like a couple of still screens, you know, Naser was just always in the better position, or at least clearly going to be in the best position throughout almost the entire play.
Yeah, the people online were having fun with this, because the way Michigan Hockey tweeted this out was very humorous. They were like, he scores into an empty net, but it's called back for icing. And all the people that weren't watching the game are like, what? What are you describing?
How does that
How does that even happen? And so I had to explain it, what had happened. No, this is just a bad call. There's no other real way around this. The letter of the law is that when the players reach the designated point, the referee then makes a judgment call about who is going to touch the puck first, in their opinion. In this case, there really isn't a lot of judgment needed because he's got a step on both guys.
Yeah.
So even if we're saying it's a race to a certain point as opposed to a judgment call, he wins it anyway.
Yeah.
But also where the puck is, it's on the far side of the net, and that's the side he's on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a preposterous call to make in that situation.
If it felt like as soon as they called that back, you're like, well, Notre Dame's tying this. Like, there's no way.
The other thing is that it's the referee who's farther away that makes the call and who's on the other side of where Nazar is. And so I think his vision might have been obscured from it. But this is a tangent I have in general about icings, is that I really want it to stop being a benefit of the doubt for the defensive player call, because I think that was the source of this. And I've seen this many times. It's very rare that they don't call icing on one that they should. Sometimes it happens, but it's not that often. Whereas there are a lot of times where it's like, oh, right? Whether it's the puck didn't really hit the end line, or the guy is chasing after it and he's clearly just slowing down and not trying, you know, trying to sell the call, and or cases like this. And I think it just is that there's just such a benefit of the doubt that, oh, if it looks like it's going to be icing, we'll just call it. And in a lot of cases, you have defensemen who are hot-dogging it back to the puck and are really
trying to draw the icing
call. Trying to draw the icing call. And then you got a forward who's like, no, I'm going to win this. And I'm saying, let's stop giving them the benefit of the doubt. And let's say, whoever, you know, we're just going to let it happen. And let's let more of those go, because I want guys trying to win the race.
Should we go back to touch-up icing?
No, that was removed for a good reason.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to reward guys that are actually trying to win the race. And Nazar was there, and he should have had a goal from it.
I agree. And then, you know, Notre Dame does get a little bit of zone time, but no real good chance. Michigan ends up kind of killing the puck away in the corner to end the game. And just a really good third period, sealing not just like the game, but coming back and sort of overcoming what they did not do well last week when they had a large lead and had done so many times. And it's just very impressive third period, and then last couple minutes for Michigan to just kind of shut and lock the door, I thought.
Yeah, I had no real complaints from that third period. They were absolutely the better team by a pretty wide margin, so they needed to get a win for that kind of effort.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about Game 2.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924 94458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
Saturday night, after Michigan does get their win on Friday, they obviously have to try to get a second one so that nobody has to go to Yost on Sunday, or else that would have been quite a weekend. They did do that in a semi-similar game with goofy second period, but this one doesn't start really the same way. Notre Dame actually has a bit better of a first period, aside from the fact that they kept taking penalties. So Michigan gets tons of penalty time in the first period. They get one pretty early on, and then they get nothing from it. Like you'd mentioned, Notre Dame's penalty kill was better in the second game on Saturday. But again, Notre Dame starts the scoring first. Michigan has a few chances thanks to that power play and then a couple other even strength. But Bavaro shoots from straight away. This one looked screened to me. It looked like it went through a few guys, and Barczewski couldn't really see it. When I saw the replay, it looked like the line of folks was more directly in front of him than the previous night.
Notre Dame tweeted out this video of it that's shot from right behind Bavaro, so you can see a pretty clear lane, and he waits out the forward up high who slides across, and it's Urnesi, and from this angle it kind of looks like Barczewski has a clear view of the shot. It's not quite directly behind, it's, you know, slightly off to the side.
Okay.
But
so you think maybe he saw this one too?
I think he had a shot too. He would have needed to kind of get around Duke a little bit. But it's a trickier one, but not like impossible. It's definitely not one where that I think it was like completely impossible. But it was just a feeling at the time that sort of like we didn't get a lot of saves last night, and now another sort of low dangerous shot is going in.
Yeah,
and it's just we're not getting any breaks right now.
And it's kind of like, how are they scoring from distance all the time? Like, are these the shots that you want if you're Notre Dame? Like, let's set up more point chances because those seem to be going in for us. Like, how is that a thing?
Well, there's a lot of danger in shooting from the point and working your way through screens and all kinds of stuff, but
right, but the puck also has to avoid bodies when there are screens.
Yeah.
So it's 1-0 Notre Dame, and you know, about halfway through the period, Michigan only has two shots. Shots are 6-2. Not a super high event game early on. It changes a little bit for Michigan because they get a power play starting the second half of the first period. There's a kneeing call, which is like your favorite, right?
I love kneeing.
Like doing it to people or like what?
No, they need to enforce that a lot. We've talked about that many times.
You want those reviewed, right?
At some points, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a really dirty play a lot of the time.
This one, I remember sitting with Ryan Zook up there, and he didn't think that this was, like, intentional. He said this was more of a hip check, and the knee, like, maybe he got him, but not because he stuck it out. Is that a kneeing, or, like, can you get kneeing if you don't, like, intentionally try? Like, that's... I'm not sure. You have...
Have to go back and find that one. I was focused on the majors more than the kneeing.
Okay.
I don't have a major issue.
So Michigan gets their second power play, and this is the one that they do get. This is an interesting goal as Casey kind of lets go from a similar spot that Bavaro's been shooting from all weekend from straight away. And this one is deflected up by TJ Hughes somehow. Like he gets his stick out in the high slot, gets his stick on it, and the puck, when you see the view from the side, the puck
hits the
starts
stick
ascending
and, yep,
after the
up.
Stick, and then it hits another stick, but a Notre Dame stick later on, and comes back down and gets below the bar and behind Barczewski. And Notre Dame reviews this thinking that, oh, it was hit with a high stick, and they were correct. It was just hit with an Irish high stick, which is legal.
Yeah, they reviewed this for the TJ Hughes deflection. I saw in the first replay, I was like, that's not above the bar. I thought they reviewed that for way too long.
You mean from TJ Hughes or the second deflection? Because there's two.
The TJ Hughes one. That's the only deflection that there was for Michigan.
Right.
The Notre Dame one doesn't matter. We're not reviewing that.
But do you think that they thought that the second deflection was a Michigan one?
No, I think they thought the TJ Hughes one was above the bar.
I see. Okay. And that's why they...
At least that's... I don't know how you could have thought that it hit the...
Because there's no other Michigan players.
No, that hit that.
It wasn't. It was a crazy
goal.
It was,
I thought they just reviewed it too long. I mean, I looked at that and I was like, you know,
there were a lot of reviews.
That's clearly below the bar. Like, let's get this going.
Yeah, there were a lot of reviews in that period. So it's 1-1, and then you get the major call that we will probably talk about is Shifsky kind of gets rocked into the boards and is bleeding from the head. The interesting part of this is it looks like he starts to fall before he's hit and goes down and then gets crunched. You know, I heard somebody say that, you know, he might have been tripped, and which is why he went down. I couldn't tell if he was like, if he was tripped or he just sort of lost his footing. The hit was kind of dangerous, obviously, because it hit him in the head. But at that point, if a guy's tripped and the next guy hits him, is it a major? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a tripping call. Maybe it's just a boarding call. It didn't feel like a major from like an intentional standpoint.
The argument that I would make on this is, and this is, I saw some people debating this online, but if he's not tripped and he just stays where he is, it's a major. Look at this right here.
Okay. Oh, because you
numbers
can see
in the back, dude's yeah. lining him up.
Okay.
If he doesn't fall down, he just gets, like, again, this is the thing I've been talking about. Like,
they're just wrecking ball shots for no
yeah,
reason.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a screenshot right here that I was just showing where he's got his back to the guy and Master Domenico's lining him up. And he's already engaged in a puck battle with the other guy. And if he doesn't fall, and he doesn't, if he stays there and then turns up towards the other end of the ice, then he hits him on the side and it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But he's lining him up while his back's to him, the numbers are to him. Even if he doesn't fall, but he doesn't turn the other way, well, probably was not going to be good.
Yeah.
And that's just, I just don't like that.
He's
in a puck battle. Go in there and help take the puck away from him.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a guy. That's kind of the chop block thing to me. And this comes up again on the Marshall Warren one. Mm. This is two instances, and this is what got me kind of mad during the game, of instances where a guy is engaged with your teammate. And I just kind of think in those situations that it should almost be a little bit of the chop block rule. Because when you are engaged in a puck battle, you are in that sense defenseless, right? Because
yeah.
it's not like you have the puck and you know what's going on. You're in a puck battle. You're focusing on something else. There's nothing else he can be. There's no way for him to really protect himself because he's battling somebody, right? That's the same principle. If you're engaged with one blocker and another guy comes in and takes you out.
Slams your knee. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's just what I don't like there. Like, there's, if you want to go in and help your guy in a puck battle, go ahead. But going in and lining a guy up in the back while he's already in a puck battle is just, I didn't like that. I thought Notre Dame was playing on the line in this game.
So you were fine with this being a major then?
Yep.
Well, so Michigan gets their third power play of the first period, and you know, they don't really do a whole lot. In fact, Notre Dame probably has the best scoring opportunity as they turn it over and Cole Knubel comes in on a breakaway and his shot goes wide. You know, Michigan makes a couple of creates a couple of good chances, but they just can't get like a great A. Bishop makes one probably pretty good save, but they don't really. I didn't think they took full advantage of having like a 5-minute major there. You talked about how Notre Dame's penalty kill was pretty good on Saturday, and I assume that this is sort of the stretch that you're talking about.
Yeah, they had Michigan's power play downloaded. They absolutely knew what Michigan was doing every time on the entries. They were pressuring the drop pass in the neutral zone, and they were jumping all over the pass as soon as you get in the zone. Michigan loves to do the drop pass, and they get the guy come in. He enters the zone. He takes 2-3 steps, and he makes a lateral pass to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all over that. And Michigan was lucky that they didn't get a shorthanded goal against.
Well, yeah, because they had that breakaway.
And they were really close to getting a
getting
couple
another
more.
One, yeah.
And I was like, you know, I want to take my time out and say, we are not doing that anymore. Just dump it in and retrieve it because
yeah.
Notre Dame was all over it. And that's good coaching from you know, their side.
So we get late into the first period. Michigan doesn't really take advantage. They obviously don't do anything on the first one. They do get one on the second one, and then they don't do anything on the major. And so the period is sort of dominated by Michigan power plays. And Michigan does get the lead at the very end of the period with about a minute to go. You have a nice pass from Brindley. He's over one side to Rutger coming in, who gets the shot and is saved. And then there's a loose puck, and TJ Hughes sort of crashes the slot crease area and pokes in the rebound to give Michigan a lead. This was the review that you were looking for and had a take on the offside. You thought it looked to be offside. That's what Jeff Jackson said after the game. But there was no definitive angle for proof?
Ibetian Plus did their job here. They messed up the camera work so badly that it got Michigan a goal because they couldn't track the puck well enough to get this on camera. This is, we see when the puck crosses the blue line, it's crossing the blue line basically out of our vision.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the bottom corner. We're watching it go to the blue line, go to the blue line, go to the blue line. Now it goes all over the blue line, and now it's out of the frame. And then we see it get caught by Brindley, and he's already, by that point, a few steps inside the blue line. And you just slow this one down. I mean, it's possible he could have dragged that foot, but, man, where he catches it, it really does not seem like he was on size here.
Well, and Jackson mentioned,
I kept waiting watching this, like, man, this is coming back. All they got to do is find the one angle where it looks like he's a step or two offside, and they didn't have it.
Jackson was saying, I think, after the game that, you know, he was pretty sure that that one was offside, but he was frustrated with the fact that Michigan didn't have a better camera angle. And he's like, you know, we have that stuff set up at Compton Ice Arena in South Bend for this particular reason. And, you know, I don't understand why they don't have that here. And I can't really disagree with his point there. I think that it's just not a good look. I mean, like, you need to have better views and angles, like, for a game like this,
yeah.
Right? Like, you can't just, we're not out on some pond. I mean, you know what's going to be reviewed, and offside is going to be one. It's not that big of a deal to put a camera on each blue line.
Yeah.
But I guess it is. So Michigan is the beneficiary in this case, and they're up 2-1. So kind of in the same spot they were the last game, not the even strength dominance, sort of some power play dominance, but, you know, to get out of the first period with a 2-1 lead.
It did feel like they left meat on the bone because you had that 5-minute major. You were unable to get anything on.
Well, and, you know, so Notre Dame challenges this, and then they are not successful, despite, you know, probably should have been successful. So they get a penalty because they'd already used their challenge earlier. And so Michigan has their fourth power play, and this one is even worse. I mean, this was, I thought, my only notes for this power play were not very good at all. So there was no real threatening chance, very little zone time.
Yeah, again, they had.
And they were going to have to, now they'd used four power plays, and, you know, if they're going to get into a scoring battle here, they're probably going to have to do it at even strength, because I don't think they're getting a lot more.
Yep.
So Notre Dame finally gets their first power play a little bit later, and nothing a whole lot going so far. You know, Michigan's penalty kill has been better. They've given up a few goals at times. They had the one rough game in Minneapolis, but outside of that have been pretty good. The power play goal that goes in on Friday, kind of like, it's not really on the power play or the penalty kill, it's more on the goalie. And then this one is a legit power play goal, and Ernesty gets a boarding call, a bit of a silly play from Ernesty there, and then Notre Dame gets the puck on deep in the zone, and Landon Slager just out-muscles Tyler Duke at the back post, pushes him to the side, and gets a tap-in backside. This is obviously not on Barczewski at all, and Duke, you can blame him to a degree. It's just that, you know, Slager's a really good player, and he's a bigger guy, he's an older guy. Duke is always going to struggle in some senses because he's going to be smaller, and he just loses a physical battle there.
I know that they're defense mates, but I would not play Casey with Duke together on a power play.
Or the penalty kill?
For this exact reason.
Well, yeah. I don't think, I mean,
I would try to find ways to make it, let's say, Triscott and Casey, or Duke and Warren.
I mean, you also have Holtz, who, this is one situation where maybe he's all right, because he is a bigger body
there.
Yeah,
or Ethan Edwards. I mean, I'd prefer to just not have Casey on the penalty kill at all, personally, but
yeah.
Because you got in maybe it's better if the roles are reversed and it's Casey getting out muscled and it's Duke having to take away the pass, because he's probably better at that. But Casey doesn't, you know, stop a pass. It's just not really his thing per se.
Yeah.
And then you've got a very undersized defenseman just getting pushed around, and that's
what happens.
That's what happens when you put those two guys on the ice in this situation.
So it's power play goal and for Notre Dame, and it's 2-2. And then we get to one of the more controversial plays of the second game, where, you know, Casey makes a move in the offensive zone. He's inside the dot, getting into the house and sort of near the slot, and he's taken down. And it looks like a pretty clear trip. It's not called, and you get a 2v1 the other way. The shot comes in and hits the guy who's back on defense, and the third guy in, I think it was Moynihan, grabs it and beats Barczewski on that shot, making it 3-2 Notre Dame. You know, there's a lot kind of going on here. You know, Nazer doesn't really get back to pick up Moynihan after the turnover. So you have even, it's not even the initial rush where the problem is. It's the next wave that comes in. But the other part is that, you know, this is what happens when you get that many power plays early in a game, is referees tend to swallow the whistle and even it out. And Michigan was going to get their fifth about halfway through the game. And I think this is a case where they just didn't blow the whistle, and it ended up costing Michigan a goal.
I didn't think this was a penalty, personally.
You didn't think it was a trip?
I think he loses his edge. We never really saw a better angle of it. Maybe it was more of a hook. It didn't look like this. I'd have to see it in slow motion. I don't think they ever showed us the close-up of the actual,
Thought he was impeded in one way. Maybe it wasn't a trip. Maybe, like you said, it was a hook or a grab or something, but...
Yeah, I think it... Yeah, we only see that, like, bird's eye view, so it's really hard to tell what's going on.
The camera's at Yost.
Because he's on the wall, he's dancing around, he makes a move around the guy.
And he gets inside leverage.
Gets inside leverage, tries to swoop inside. It looks like maybe the stick gets up on the hands, but he's trying to make a hard cut there, and it kind of looked like he lost an edge. I
just didn't think they were ever getting that call.
I think if it had been like a two-hand hack at the legs, they might get it.
I mean,
but
if it's obvious.
When I watched it live, I thought there was enough reasonable doubt that you're just not going to call that in that situation.
And if penalties were 2-1,
Maybe you do.
But
I thought it was pretty borderline.
So Notre Dame again finds themselves with a 3-2 lead midway through the game. And, you know, at this point they're thinking, okay, you know, we're mostly being outplayed in this series, yet we keep finding ourselves
with
a chance to win.
That goal was also another kind of little bit of a tough one on
Barczewski?
Yeah, the goal that ends up happening, because he gets that shot block, comes right back. It's just one-on-one right in the slot, and it gets overpowered by the shooter. Mm. Unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't mind someone picking up the shooter, but...
It's 3 goals on 12 shots.
Yeah, there was that.
I mean...
That was a point of where you're sitting here and you're saying, you know, I don't hate any of these goals per se, but there sure are a lot going in the net.
There are a lot going in the... And that's what I tweeted at that point in time. Yeah. I said... There's one constant thing with this team. It's just a lot of goals go in.
Yep.
For whatever reasons. Yep. But
Michigan is able to come back and tie it not too long after. Dylan Duke has a very Dylan Duke goal where he has a wraparound that's saved. The puck bounces around. Ernesty gets in there, gets a whack at it, and ends up coming back to Duke on the other side, and he slams it in the open net to tie it at 3. You know, Duke is just, that's just what he does. He's around the net. He makes trouble. He gets chances. They're not always grade A's, but he's puts pressure on you from down low. And if you don't secure rebounds and clear it, he's there and has gotten a lot of goals that way this year.
Yeah, this is just a nice hard work goal around the net. You get the wraparound try, Ernesty bangs away, and then a fortunate bounce to you, and Michigan needed that. Get right back. It wasn't too far after Notre Dame taking the lead, and so it sort of reset momentum.
So this is where we can talk about the other non-major that you wanted to discuss. You sent me an interesting text about hoping there would be a coaching fight.
I'm
for
always
this
interested
one.
In coaching fights.
Because that happens so
not,
often.
Not a physical fight, but if I was a coach, I definitely would be leaning over the glass to say a few things here and there.
Just... getting into it.
This isn't football. They're not on the opposite side. They're right there.
Yeah.
You know.
You think basketball coaches should yell at each other more?
They do sometimes.
Sometimes.
Remember that fight from Juwan and Mark Turgeon?
There was a lot of fights from Juwan that you could be referencing
in the Big
here.
Ten tournament,
yeah.
That one
Yeah,
year.
I do remember that one.
I was calling that game.
So this is the play that Warren gets hit. He kind of dances a guy and tries to duck in between two guys, and then one guy hits him, and then the other guy hits him, and he... You know, I thought he sort of put himself in a dangerous spot by where he went with the puck. I had a couple people tell me that they thought it was just a hockey hit. You thought it was not. I had other people say that it was, you know, this was a dirty hit. I just don't really have opinions on these things because I haven't played enough. I haven't taken enough of these hits to really understand what the reality is of this and what you should be expecting from these situations. But so I'll let you go on your take on this. You wanted a major, you wanted a penalty. What did you want here?
Under the letter of Big Ten law, it should have been a major, no question to me.
What would it be in the NHL in this particular hit, in your eyes?
I don't know what it would have been. I know it would have been an altercation.
Would there have been a penalty?
And that's why I was talking about coaching offense, because the way college hockey is, it doesn't allow you as a team to respond in ways that aren't the coach yelling at the other coach or doing something that hampers your team, right? Because in this situation, you know, I would tell my team in an NHL game, okay, now we're going to start throwing some hits back and, you know, go find that guy and ask him for a fight. And we need to stand up for ourselves. This reminded me of that Penn State weekend when Rutger got hurt. Like, this is the third time this weekend where, you know, and the second time in this game where hits are happening and our guys are laying on the ice injured, like not moving. Like, it's time to tell these guys enough is enough. We're not getting pushed around. We're not going to let them run our guys. Because this is another case where you got two guys just come up and boom, you know, sort of sandwich a guy. And it's like, come on.
I mean, he walks into it, though, right? Like, he dekes a guy, goes around
him. What I didn't like about this hit is the way that the second guy finishes through it. And that's what I thought was going to get the major call.
Okay.
Is that he comes up and, you know, Warren's head level is down, and so it's a more vulnerable hit. But the way he kind of extends his, he almost kind of like punches through the hit.
Okay.
And I didn't like that part of it. I thought at that point, given the way the weekend had gone, how much hitting there had been, how many times Notre Dame had towed this line, how many guys they had left injured on the ice, I had just had enough of that. It was time for Michigan to stand up and you know, kind of push back.
Well, they review it, and there's no penalty called, no major, nothing. Warren went to the locker room, ended up coming back to start the third, so he ended up being fine. But it was definitely a controversial play, at the least, I should say. So it's 3-3, end of the second. They go to the third period, and then this is where Michigan's sort of skill takes over. You get Rutger running down a loose puck in the zone, and as he's sort of fading towards the blue line, slips a nice little pass to Tyler Duke, who kind of crashes down through the slot, fades to the front post, and then slips it all the way back across to the second guy in, who's Gavin Brindley, and he just taps in the back of the net. A really well-worked goal, I thought, from everyone involved. And, you know, kind of in these situations, you know, when you're having to end somebody's season and you're in the playoffs in a tight game in the third, you're looking to your best players on the ice, and, you know, two of them are involved in this goal.
Rutger holds the puck in, and then defensive effort from the two Irish in front is leaving a lot to be desired.
Paltry? Is it paltry?
And Tyler Duke just kind of goes around them, and they don't really move, and then you get Brindley on the other side, and the pass just goes right through. He taps it in. That's just taking advantage of really poor play from your opponents.
So it's 4-3 Michigan. Edwards gets beaten back on defense, ends up having to take a pretty bad hooking call. I don't think it was going to be a penalty shot, but he was, you know, close. They end up calling a penalty on him, and Notre Dame gets a power play. And this is maybe one of the best penalty kills that Michigan has. It's just they get clear after clear after clear. Just Notre Dame's chance to get back in and tie it, and Michigan's penalty kill just says no. And they just, I didn't think that Notre Dame got great chances again in the third period until late. And, you know, Michigan does get a power play because Moldenauer gets the puck out of the zone and chases it down afterwards and gets tripped in the process. There's really no way that they couldn't call that. And there was about, you know, 6-7 minutes left, and Michigan's able to kill 2 minutes off of that. They don't really get great chances, but they do get the time off the clock, which was pretty big at that point. Notre Dame doesn't go empty until 2:15, and then they get both teams actually get chances for goals, because you have Rutger shooting at the empty net from center ice twice and missing it by, you know, 2 inches, and Notre Dame gets two really grade A chances with Barczewski down and out, and he makes two pad saves, kind of the same save two different times. One of them looked like this is done, it's in, it's a tie game, but Barczewski gets his pad there, sort of makes up for some of his less than stellar play earlier in the weekend. and, you know, gets Michigan to the end of the game, the end of the series, and into the semifinals with his play down the stretch.
The empty net stuff was very frustrating.
Like not hitting it?
Yeah, they had a lot of opportunities to do it.
Rutgers had two great chances.
They had a couple where there wasn't a lot of traffic from center or their own side of the ice. Then they had two or three when they were in the offensive zone that kept getting blocked. And it's just like, come on.
Come on.
Shoot the puck into the net. So I also, by the way, before we get into the Barczewski stuff, I did think that they had some really chances that didn't result in goals in this game.
Michigan? I
mean, yeah, there was the one where Rutger had the pass on the far side and the net's open, and he shoots it like right into where
Bischel's
coming across, and then they have that one where it's like right there for Duke, and for like the third time in a few weeks, he just can't put the tap in. Like it just
was that after his goal, or was that before?
I don't remember. I sent you a text about it at the time, but I was very. It's just this is your thing. If we give you an easy tap in, put the puck in the net.
Yeah.
So it just kind of felt like Notre Dame had really sort of hung around in a lot of ways, and then when you kept missing the empty net, it was just like, oh.
And well, you know, they scored, what, 3 and 4 goals? So they scored 7 goals on the weekend.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, a normal amount. They have a tendency to get kind of stuck below 2 goals sometimes, and so that's enough probably to win a series with Ryan Bischel, but not this weekend.
Especially when there was the line on the HemGo pod in the hockey segment where Brian was like, it's really sad that Notre Dame is 9-1 in games where they score 3 goals or more and they're not in the tournament. And I was just sitting there like, the problem is they've scored 3 goals or more in 10 games.
Well, I think that's what I meant.
Like,
you need to score more goals.
They don't score enough. And it was concerning that.
Well, that goes back to one of the first points of Danny Nelson being gone.
Yeah.
Is he scores a lot of goals and he's a very dangerous player, gets other people involved. And, you know, without him, I just think that they're just in some trouble.
And by the way, Notre Dame had a good look for a tap in the final 5 seconds.
Yeah.
They had that guy on the wing. He sends the puck right through the crease and just no one gets a stick on it. They looked really dangerous, 6-on-5.
So did Barczewski redeem himself with those couple saves at the end?
He made the ones that mattered.
Yep.
It wasn't a great weekend overall, but found a way to get there.
So Michigan wins the series 2-0. They don't have to play on Sunday. And then now we can transition into other scorers and talk about who they will play next weekend in the semifinals. So the season ends for Augustana with a couple of games against the U18 team. They lose 8-3 and 3-0.
Not good.
Not good, but also, you know, a good first season, I think. They got points out of a number of different games. It wasn't just beating up on one or two teams, but played a number of teams tough. They look like they could be, you know, in the position to build on that going forward, I think. The Providence Friars lost to BU to help Michigan on, was it Thursday night, I believe, before the Michigan series. And then they tied the Fighting Craig Rosses 3-3.
Yeah, they play UMass in the Hockey East tournament.
Which is good because UMass got lost in the backwoods of Maine twice. 2-1 on Friday, and then they still couldn't get out the next day and lost 4-3. Which sets up a big series because one of those teams will finish behind Michigan in pairwise.
The UMass-Providence series is a one game, just single game.
I don't think so. It's a quarterfinal matchup, isn't it?
I'm looking at it right now. Midweek, first round for seed 6 through 11, weekend reseed for single game quarterfinals.
Really? The quarters are singles? That's interesting. Huh. Okay.
Let me see.
Yeah. No, I see it. It's on Saturday night. They don't play Friday. Or they play... Yeah, they don't play Friday. Well, there you go. So one of those teams will finish, like, right? I mean, I'm right about that, right? They will be behind Michigan in pairwise regardless.
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking at the bracket from last year. The whole Hockey East tournament's all single elimination.
Well, that's something.
Even those 6-11 games, all that, all single games. So one of those teams will benefit, and one of those teams will not. And they're right on the bubble, so presumably whoever wins is...
Could be
in good shape.
The loser's probably out.
Yep, their season's over.
Yep. So. All right. Lindenwood season is ended, so we move on to the St. Cloud Clouds, who reigned...
Also, season is...
in might also trouble. Be over. They rein themselves out of a third period lead to lose 6-5 in overtime against Duluth.
That was a major choke. They were up
multiple goals, I think.
They were up 4-2 and then 5-3, and they allowed two goals in the final six-ish minutes of the game, and then they gave up an overtime winner.
And then they lost the next day 4-2 as well. So they're in a bit of trouble. They have, what is it, the NCHC tournament next week, and they will be hosting Western Michigan. So,
which is also interesting. So if St. Cloud wins those games, they could jump back into the picture and make a run here.
And
if they
potentially
do,
knock Western out.
They would probably knock Western out. So it's 14-15 are playing, and 13-16 are playing.
So that's great for Michigan, because two of those teams are going to be
well,
done.
That's why their tournament probability is basically 100% at this
right.
point in time, is that it's that.
Not everyone behind them can win.
Yep. If the bubble was evenly distributed across conferences, it would be much more perilous.
Right. Right. So, and then...
And Colorado College plays Omaha. So...
it's all coming up maize and blue, I guess. The Stonehill Rock Stones completed their season earlier in the week in Alaska. They lost 9-1 and 4-1, but hey, they won a game this year. We cannot take that away.
They won two
them.
Games.
Okay, but one of them was against a D3 school. We're not counting D3 wins, Alex.
We have breaking news on Stonehill.
Uh-oh.
Their coach has retired.
After logging his win. Against Lindenwood, was it, I think? I think Stonehill beat Lindenwood for their...
Yeah, 4-2.
For their one win.
Let me see how long he had been their head coach. His name is David Borges.
He's got a good first name.
Might be related to Al.
That would be great. I hope he is related to Al.
He's been there quite a while.
Yeah.
So.
He did his job, got him to
D1.
D1, won a game, and then said, all right, I'm going fishing or rocking or stoning or something. So, all right. So the rest of the Big Ten.
We should talk about pairwise first.
Before we talk about the Big Ten tournament? Okay.
So Michigan is up to 10.
Kind of.
Well, they're 11th in RPI, but they're 10th in pairwise.
But the margins are so slim that it feels like...
But because of all of that crossover in conferences, their probability has been upped to, I believe, 99.4%. Let me check.
So the one thing we right don't really here. Want is those series...
Oh, they're up to 99.6 after the Wisconsin-Ohio State game, so...
The one thing we don't really want is like a bunch of three-game series, right? Like we don't need teams getting wins and then losing.
Clean sweeps would be good.
Yes.
So the top nine teams are all locked in at 100%. Michigan is at 99.6. And then Colorado College, WMU, and Omaha are all in good shape, over 75%, but not fully
guaranteed.
In. And then Providence and UMass are in worse shape at 40-some percent. They probably need a deep run, and they need some help. In whoever wins that matchup wants to then win the next round.
We'll need to.
Because they think, let me look at the bracket again, they would be playing BC, right?
Yes, I don't know if there's reseeding. Is it reseeding?
Not reseeding for this. Oh, it is reseeding
yeah,
for the semis.
Yeah, because it'll be semis. So,
but you'd have a credible chance of getting any of Maine, BU, or BC in that next round, which would give them the opportunity to get
a big win.
A big win. Yeah. So that's what they are facing. And then Cornell down at 30%. That's basically their probability of winning.
Cornell's at 17?
Yeah, that's their probability of winning the ECAC, essentially.
Yeah, and which they could.
Easily
they
could do.
They just have to
They'd have to win one game.
Quinnipiac. Yeah. Well, they start with, what, Harvard, I think? They have a series against Harvard.
Harvard is really bad this year. They're 50th.
Yeah, that's
one of the steepest falls from a tournament team to 50th.
That's poor.
So, and then right on the fringes, UNH and St. Cloud are at 12 and 14%, which, again, they need deep runs in their conference tournament. So, as for bracketology, we are in a bit of a pickle, as we were last week, with this problem involving the four seeds and the one seeds, which we detailed last week. Most likely remedy is that Providence, if it started today, would be playing probably NoDak, and then...
Well, they have to host, right? So now you bring in the thing about hosting, because Uno has to go to...
Well, Providence doesn't host, but Omaha does.
Omaha hosts in Sioux Falls, because that makes sense.
But Brown is hosting Providence.
So Providence isn't hosting themselves?
Providence. We talked about this last week, yeah.
Okay, well, I
and UMass, if they beat Providence, they host that one, which will almost certainly have BU or BC as the one, and they would be the four, and now it's just a nightmare. This is one of the worst instances of bracketology hijinks that I can remember.
Well, hooray, NCAA, if only you could put them in.
But for Michigan's sake, given where Michigan is likely to end up, they have a 32% chance of being 12, 31% at 11, and 23 at 10. So we're just going to say that's
their... They're most likely going to be a three seed.
Most likely going to be a three seed. And
which means they probably, depending on Uno, they probably don't go to Sioux Falls.
And more than likely, MSU would be in the 5-6 slot. So you would probably not have that pairing.
I would guess not.
And you would probably not have the Minnesota pairing.
I would guess not on that as well.
So that means more than likely the teams Michigan would be playing are, drumroll, Quinnipiac or Maine.
I hope we get Maine.
I want Maine, yeah. I know.
Maybe Paul Carrillo show up.
Losing to Maine would be more fun than losing to other teams.
Well, we've played Quinnipiac the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So it
could be a start of a rivalry.
Yeah, you know that? Yeah.
So, but those are the teams to be on the watch for.
All right. So now we'll talk about the rest of the Big Ten tournament, the other quarterfinals. One of them a little more interesting than the other. Minnesota beats Penn State twice. They win handily, 5-1, and then are 2-2 in the third. And Penn State is dominating the game. They have the puck in the zone the whole time. I mean, they were dominating in shots, which is not surprising because hashtag Penn State. But they also just had the puck the whole time. And they get a goal, actually, to go up 3-2. And it's reviewed for offsides, ironically. And it's called back. And then Minnesota is able to score with a couple minutes left, hold on, and win and secure their spot in the semifinals.
They survived that game without Jimmy Snuggerud.
Because he gets tossed, for a major call, right?
Very, very early in that game. That first period was crazy. There were the Snuggerud major. Then while they were serving it, they took two more cross-checking calls. So there was like nonstop 5-on-3 for a long period
of
time.
And Penn State couldn't take advantage?
They could not score on it. And then right after that, it's a parade of penalties on Penn State, which gives Minnesota 5-on-3 time, which they do take advantage of. And that was...
What awful hockey. Just alternate 5-on-3s. I don't know, man.
Penn State, unfortunately, they scored 3 goals in their final 4 games against Minnesota this season.
Yeah, they did. They have struggled in Minneapolis this year. So that's it for Penn State. Minnesota moves on to next weekend to play Michigan because... In Madison, Ohio State wins 3-1 on Friday. They lose 4-2, setting up a rubber match on Sunday evening. And Ohio State jumps out to a 2-0 lead where they hold most of the game, get an empty netter. Wisconsin gets one back, but the Buckeyes close it out. And now the Buckeyes are going to East Lansing next weekend. Michigan's going to Minneapolis to face Minnesota. I don't hate the matchup of Minnesota for Michigan. I also don't mind the idea that if Michigan and Ohio State win, the Big Ten championship game will be at Yost.
It would be interesting.
Positive, I think.
Yeah.
Can Michigan get a 2 if they win the next 2 games? Is that on the table?
Let me pull the matrix back.
I wonder if they can, because you know that they would get 2 wins over, you know, I guess beating Ohio State wouldn't be that.
No, they have no shot at getting in 2.
There's 0% chance?
0.1.
So they max out at 9, probably? Or
9 is a 1% chance. Mm. So it's...
And at that point, it doesn't even really matter where you finish because you're just going to play the teams you're allowed to play in the other seed range, which are not Minnesota and not Michigan State. So
well, the problem with this tournament is that it's all Big Ten and NCHC teams.
So
you have 2 Hockey East at the top, and then they might get one more besides Maine, but it's basically the 2 big dogs in the Hockey East. The depth wasn't really there, and then everything else that's filling it up is 4 and 5 Big Ten and NCHC teams.
Yeah.
So that creates some nightmares in terms of putting this bracket together. One note on the Buckeyes, if we're including overtime games as full results, they are 5-11 in their last 16 games, 4 wins over Wisconsin, and 1 over MSU.
in East Lansing.
Yep.
They split in East Lansing. I think blew them out. Like
6-2.
Yeah.
Yep.
A couple weeks ago. So Michigan in the last month has played Notre Dame, Minnesota, Notre Dame, and now
more
Minnesota. So, you know, we just talked about the Gophers last week, but they're 6th in pairwise as of currently, 33rd in Corsi. Seems kind of low for a team like Minnesota. They generally seem to have the puck more. Michigan's up a little bit higher.
They were not as good in the first half of the season, but they've been really good recently.
All right. And they have a good power play, 24%, not too bad. Penalty kills at 80, which is fine, not really remarkable in either direction. They have 13 drafted skaters, a couple of high-enders. You know, we talked about, obviously, Snuggerud, Rinzel, and I believe they have one other guy that's slipping my mind that's like a second-round pick.
Chesley.
Yes. They have 6 skaters that are scoring over 0.75 points per game, but not any... No skaters that are scoring over a point per game. Rhett Pitlick is at 0.97. He has 19 goals in 36 games. Snuggerud hit the 20-goal mark. He's at 0.92 points per game. And then Oliver Moore, who's getting most of his points on assists, is at 0.92 points per game. So they have a few guys that score, but this isn't, like we said before, the traditional powerhouse bunch of snipers and scorers from Minnesota.
As we are intimately familiar with, Jackson Nelson, their captain, has been on a rampage recently.
He's been on fire in the last,
couple weeks. He has 8 goals in his last 5 games.
Jeez. And he has 16 on the year, so half of his goals are in the last, 2 weeks?
Yep. So he's been real hot. And, this is a good Minnesota team. They are playing really well right now. They are 14-3-1 in their last 18 games. Including some overtime games. It wouldn't shock me if this one went to overtime. These two teams played an overtime game in the Big Ten tournament a few years back. This is the 4th year in a row that these teams will be playing in the Big Ten tournament.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Well, the one being at Notre Dame, right?
Because yep,
that was
neutral
the
site.
Neutral site game. The goalie is still Justin Close. He's having a good year, 2.33 and a 9.23. Good. It's just Michigan's seen him a lot and generally is not. Struggled to score goals on him.
Generally not. They've had their way. So
they actually chased him with 3 goals after a goofy play that he made 2 weeks ago on the Saturday game, and Nathan Airey came in and was all right.
Michigan has scored 3, 2, 2, and 6 against Minnesota this season. There was all the talk online. People were asking, "Is this good matchup? Is this not a good matchup?" And I don't know.
I don't think it's a bad matchup.
Michigan's
played 4. They had one game that they didn't play very well in, and the other games they've had either leads or, you know, gone down to the very end in. So it does not feel that if they have a high quality effort, they should get run out of this game.
Yeah. My point about matchups is that I just don't care about matchups with this Michigan team.
It's all about themselves.
Yeah. I think the most important thing is them playing up to their abilities and playing detail oriented, managing the puck well, and increasingly getting good goaltending.
Yep.
That is going to be a huge key to them having any real success in the postseason going forward. So it's about them. And overall, they've been better recently. We were talking about them with their backs against the wall after that Penn State series, and they've won 5 of the 6 games since then. So that's good. But
they've also played better defensively since then.
Yeah, and
the defense has been
undercut by subpar goaltending.
Well, so if they can figure out a way to get good goaltending and play good defense at the same time, they've been scoring goals mostly throughout that stretch. That never generally seems to be a problem. So, you know, it's like you said, one game. If they show up and they play really well, I like their chances. You know, if they play the way they did, you know, the first Friday game in Minneapolis, then I think it's going to be a quick exit. We should also note that this game is going to be, I believe, at 9 p.m. on BTN, so it will actually be on TV. BTN minus is done for the year. Alex, you're throwing a party over there.
One note on that, the camera work was subpar, but I thought the broadcasters, some of whom I know personally, did a good job.
Shouting out your friends?
No, it's just the broadcasters are really volatile with BTN, and they've been much better this year because they have qualified people doing them. So good job, except for the note about Connor O'Neill's on Friday night, but we don't need to get into that.
Okay. So 9 p.m., it'll be the second game. You can watch Ohio State, Michigan State before, probably rooting for Ohio State, and then Michigan will have a chance that if they win, they can potentially host the Big Ten Championship.
Michigan Hockey Cast 6.19 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Next week, we will be either discussing our hibernation for a week or a rivalry Big Ten tournament title game.